Awesome. Good morning, everyone. Like Jeff said, my name is Darcy. If you don't recognize this part of my body, it's because I usually have a guitar in front of me or some drums. So if I start doing weird things with my hands, just forgive me a little bit because I'm used to having something to hold. I'm going to start this morning by telling you a story. The story takes place about 7 years ago. It's 2010. My girlfriend, who, spoiler alert, it is Barbara, who is now my wife, she had just been informed that a friend of hers had two extra tickets to a concert we'd both been really looking forward to seeing, but was sold out. So we, without much discussion, say, yes, we'll take the tickets. We make the plan. We're all ready to go. It's very exciting. But about a week before the concert, we find out and realize that Barbara had committed to being a youth leader at a youth retreat the same weekend as the concert. So we are both disappointed, although admittedly I'm a little less disappointed because I still am going to be attending the concert. but Barbara, being a committed youth leader, she decides to, you know, fulfill her youth leaderly duties at this weekend. And I go about finding a replacement. So I find Simon. Simon is a great guy. I really like Simon. I don't know him super well, actually. He's really more of a friend of a friend. But he's also a big fan of the band, and we make plans to go. We're going to meet at his North Vancouver apartment. We're going to ride the C bus across to the venue. It's going to be great. And the day before the concert, I get a message from Barbara, and she has just found out she's no longer needed on this youth retreat weekend. She's free, she's open, she's available. And rather than telling my girlfriend, hey, that's great, we can go to the concert like we planned, I just weakly reply, sorry, I don't really want to, I don't know, Simon is planning on coming. And I, so the next night on the C bus ride over, I feel a little twinge of guilt. And during the concert, the amazing experience that is happening, I think I should probably do something for Barbara, seeing as she, my poor girlfriend, is at home by herself, not here. So after the concert, I go down to the merch booth and I find like the best piece of merchandise memorabilia that they have to offer. I'm not going to lie, it was a Mumford & Sons keychain. It was about this big, $4. And plastic, of course. I would have brought it with me to show you all, but it has since gone the way of most of other things that we don't want to talk about anymore. So later that night, I get there wearing my new perfectly fitting Mumford & Sons t-shirt, I might add, and I give Barbara this keychain, and she, for some reason, is not that thankful. I'm like, but I was thinking about you while I was at the concert, and I got this just for you. needless to say, we have since got married, and I have learned a lot from that experience and many others. and the second time I saw Mumford & Sons, my wife was with me. So there was a big difference between the first time I saw them and the second time, not only in my life, but also in the size of the crowd. Mumford & Sons started out a while ago, but they just exploded. The second time we saw them, there was over 20,000 people. We were outside at Holland Park. Needless to say, their foot-stomping energy and, you know, layered harmonies have been all over the world, and they've really seen this resurgence of this folk movement. They even sang with Bob Dylan at the Grammys a few years ago, which is a big deal if you're into that sort of thing. Their lead singer, Marcus Mumford, actually got his start playing music the same way I did, in church. My dad was a pastor, and both of his parents as well were leaders in the Vineyard movement in the UK, where they're from, over in England. So you can see from this background of his the great amount of spiritual references and themes that exist in their music. Now, Marcus doesn't really like to talk about his faith to reporters, which is fair. You know, people, even if they're famous, like to be private. But he has called his spiritual journey a work in progress. He has said, I have my personal views about the person of Jesus and who he was, but I've kind of separated myself from the culture of Christianity. So clearly there's some tension there that exists between the faith of his upbringing and how he sees the world today. And that tension is clear in the song that we're going to discuss and listen to today. I think it really captures the voice of a lot of our generation in the world today, and also has something to say to us in the church as well. If you're visiting with us or you've missed the last few weeks, the series we're doing right now is called Songs to the Unknown God, as you saw. We're taking a look at spiritual truths and glimmers of God in the culture around us, specifically using music, which is very powerful. Also, I'll just say, if you are visiting with us, we recognize that there are different levels of faith or experience with the church and God, and we hope that wherever you're coming from today, you can still engage with what we're talking about, and we would love to, I would love to, or any other people who are up here, continue conversations with you if you have any more questions, etc. So, let's dig into the song and listen and watch together as Mumford and Sons sing the song, Believe. Let's watch.
You may call it in the evening, but you've only lost the night. Preset all your pretty feelings, may they comfort you tonight. And I'm climbing over something, and I'm running through these walls. I don't even know if I believe. I don't even know if I believe. I don't even know if I believe everything you're trying to say to me.
Like a psalm, doesn't it? I don't know if you've spent much time reading the Psalms in the Bible. It's a book of songs and poems that have been really the songbook of the church since ancient times, since before the church even was called the church. You hear these phrases, like you can, if you've remembered any of the Psalms that you've read, "Oh Lord, why do you hide your face from me? Why do you stand far away in times of trouble? I don't even know if I believe. Oh God, do not keep in silence. Do not hold your peace. Say something. Say something like you love me. Consider me and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes. Tell me I'm alive." Do you know how that feels? Does that sound familiar to you? Is that what doubt feels like? Darkness, loneliness, silence. Is that perhaps what the writers of these Psalms and what Marcus Mumford must have been going through when they're writing these words? You can hear that broken relationship, that tension, that longing for some sort of reconciliation. As with many pieces of art, this song can be interpreted a few different ways, probably most commonly in the world at large as more of a relational struggle between a lover and someone who has lost their trustworthiness. But I think the spiritual themes and language is enough to know that there's also an expression of longing, of the longing of a soul for a God that is in question. So with that in mind, I would like to talk today about doubt. I would like to suggest that doubt is not in opposition to faith, but rather is a part of a healthy and normal faith journey that is best worked through in community. So let me ask you, the last time you were having doubts, how many of you shared that with someone else? How many people did you talk to about it? You know, with a spouse or a loved one, the members of your small group perhaps, with a pastor maybe? It's kind of hard to express doubts, isn't it? Have you heard some of these doubts and uncertainty expressed in the world around you? I bet there's a good chance that you have. I recently read a survey, a Canadian survey of religion and spirituality that was just done this year. I encourage you to check it out online if you're interested. It's very, very telling in a lot of different ways by the Angus Reid Institute. But they broke down the belief of the people in our country into four levels. There's non-believers, spiritually uncertain, privately faithful, and religiously committed. Now, just keep in mind as well, the words spiritual and religion aren't necessarily just talking about Christianity, but the many different diverse faiths that exist in our country. But it was interesting to me to note that the two extremes, which took the lower percentages, aren't something that we're necessarily going to focus on today, but that the highest majority, the more murky middle ground, was the spiritually uncertain and the privately faithful, meaning people who have some faith but don't often express it. A total of 60% of our country is in that spiritually uncertain place. So what does that tell us today? Well, for starters, the wrestling with belief that we find in the song is probably hitting the same spot that a lot of people are feeling in our country. Mumford is questioning the God of his upbringing and unsure of what he believes. As the chorus clearly portrays, doubt has become a major part of his life. I don't even know if I believe. I don't even know if I believe. And when you look at what seem to be the primary hesitations and stumbling blocks of people entering into the community of Christianity, these doubting questions are often at the core of the issues that people have. I've had some firsthand opportunity to interact with some of those along with Barbara and Jeff and others doing the Alpha course here at NLCC over the last few years. Sitting around the table with the various guests from different walks of life, we've heard a lot of doubting, whether it be doubting the resurrection, questions of science or gender and sexuality issues that seem to be opposed to what the Bible says, or just a general sort of inexplicable doubt. Uncertainty exists all around us. And it can often prohibit people from engaging in our community here. And here's the thing. If you or if any one of those guests at Alpha make the decision or you have made the decision to follow after Jesus, to seek him with your life, to become a Christian and be part of this community, those questions and doubts aren't going to just stop. There is an element of becoming a new creation that's talked about in the New Testament, but is this doubt part of the new creation that we are in Christ, or is it part of the old that we need to get rid of? I think as we dig further into the stories of God interacting with his people in the Bible, we'll find that doubt is an integral part of our human experience and something to be wrestled through rather than avoided. Doubt is not the same as disbelief. I'll make that distinction early on as we talk here. We're not talking about completely rejecting the ideas or completely moving away from these things that we have in question, but rather having this tension that existed in the song. So as we turn to the Bible, let's talk about Job. I don't know how deep you guys have dug into the Old Testament, but Job can be kind of a bit of a deep dive. It's very long. It's like 40-some chapters. There's a lot of words. There's a lot of words in there. So for the sake of time, I'm not just going to read it all, as wonderful as it is. But Job is often focused on as a book that deals a lot with suffering and God directly interacting with someone in the midst of their suffering. I think that there's a lot of questions and doubts that we can relate to here. So Job is introduced at the beginning of the book as a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys, and very many servants, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. It doesn't necessarily sound like similar currency to what we are used to, but that really was a lot of wealth. He was pretty well off. On top of having 10 children, 11,000 various types of livestock, he also had his health. From the first chapter of Job all the way through to the second, Job suffers loss after loss. The same day, he receives 4 different messages that his children, his livestock, and his servants have all died from various causes. And finally, after all of that, his own health goes down very significantly, very quickly, and he is suffering personally. Even his wife says to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." Whew, that's brutal. Can you imagine how Job is feeling in that moment? Depressed, bitter, alone. A little later on in chapter 13 of Job, he asks God, "Why do you hide your face and count me as your enemy?" That is an intense feeling of feeling opposed to God and apart from God, his enemy. It's very strong language. So Job's 3 friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, they come to visit Job in the midst of his suffering. They sit with him for the standard 7 days of mourning in silence. And on the 7th day, Job starts to talk. He starts to share his thoughts and begin a conversation with each of them. And they all start to, in turn, respond to him. There's a lot of back and forth for 27 chapters of pure dialogue. If it was a movie, it might be a little boring, I'm not going to lie. Well, I'll just give you a few snippets here of what his friends say to him. Zophar says in chapter 11 that God is manifold or abundant in understanding, knowing then that God exacts less than your guilt deserves. Less than your guilt deserves. So Eliphaz is saying, you've probably done more wrong than you're even getting punished for, so you should count yourself lucky. Why are you complaining? And maybe Zophar has something nicer to say. I don't know. Chapter 15. Should a wise man answer with windy knowledge and fill his belly with the east wind? Should he argue in unprofitable talk or in words with which he can do no good? But you are doing away with the fear of God and hindering meditation before God. Wow. Hey, Job, you don't fear God. You don't, your relationship, it's no good. I can tell that from the outside. This is what his friend is saying to him. Job was a faithful and devout man, yet he experienced these great hardships. He had tough questions for God, and he's not alone in the scriptures. We find in the Psalms, Psalm 13, "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day?" Or how about Psalm 22? My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I still find no rest. Say something. Say something. Tell me you love me. Tell me I'm alive. Sounds like many of the ancient songs of God's people might still resonate with us, with Mumford and Sons. And I'll be honest, it is a bit refreshing, isn't it? How often do we feel the need to hide our doubts or sweep under the rug all our fears and our questions? It's refreshing because it's honest. When we can take the first step in being honest with God, with ourselves then, and then eventually with others, we start to live in that freedom that God sacrificed everything for. We start to live in that life abundant. When we open up about our doubts, it gives way for a communal wrestling of sorts. We're able to dialogue, ask questions. If we have a community around us, we can grow stronger in our faith, deepen our faith, and deepen the bond that holds us together as a community. If and how we deal with our doubt is essential to our faith, and not only our faith, but the faith and doubts of those around us as well. Because who wants to struggle alone? Who wants to feel that loneliness all the time? Even Jesus didn't want to be alone. We find him in the garden nearing the end of his life in the final hours, and he is wrestling with God. But he brings his disciples with him. He asks them to come. And even when he separates himself for a brief time, he still asks them, "Wait up for me. I don't want to be alone. When I come back, when I need you, I want you to be here." Right up until he is on the cross, we find Jesus engaging in the community around him, but in a different way. Many of his disciples have fallen away, but now it's him within the community of God in himself, crying out. God questioning himself, saying, echoing those words from Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me?" I think it's fair to say that with examples like Job, who did not leave his faith in God through all his calamity, or the psalmist who always returned to saying, "God, you are good," or Jesus himself who cries out saying, "Why have you forsaken me?" In all this company, I think it's safe to say we can engage within the context of our faith in asking questions and in seeking out each other as we doubt. Each of us, whether right now or at some point in our life, has had some of these questions. Will a job or a place to live be provided in a time of need? Will a loved one be healed? Will our current relationship that is broken be mended? Why did this happen? What's going to happen? God, where are you? Why don't I feel you the way I used to? If these questions are sounding more and more personal, I'll be honest, it's because they are. I chose the topic of doubt today because the last few years of my life have been full, not always, but they have been filled with some of these questions. I don't necessarily have time or want to go into all the details here. But I have questioned more than I thought I would in my lifetime. Like I said, I grew up in a pastor's home, very strong Christian upbringing, and these kind of things I didn't think would ever be a big deal for me. I knew a lot about the Bible, I knew a lot about God, and yet, through different life circumstances, I found myself questioning these things. I never lost my faith in God. I never felt like he didn't exist or any of those things. I've always held to that. But really, it's been the community around me that has kept this faith alive for me. I'm not speaking today from a comfortable distance away from these things. I'm right in the middle of this journey still. But because I've been surrounded by such an amazing community, my wife, friends here at Yorkson and elsewhere, I've been able to be supported and to express these things, which I hadn't even necessarily thought of before. So I know now that I'm closer to God than I have been in a very long time, which is a beautiful thing. So, if doubt is such a normative part of our faith and should be dealt with within the context of community, what is our response? I think it's twofold. There's two sides to this story. As with Job, who suffered and experienced great loss, he had friends around him. They stepped in to his grieving, and he had the courage to share what was on his heart, to say, "I'm cursing the day that I was born, and I know God exists, but why won't he answer me? Why won't he change my situation?" As the one who is doubting, it's finding the courage to be honest with ourselves and with God and with those around us and those that we love. I think the other aspect of engaging in doubts as a community is as the responder, the one who is hearing someone question these things. Let's look again at Job and his friends, and maybe not so much as a good example, but as not the greatest example. God himself, when he shows up at the end of Job, is not pleased with how his friends dealt with the situation. This is from Job 42. God says, "My anger burns against you, Eliphaz, and against your two friends, for you have not spoken of me what is right. My servant Job shall pray for you, for I will accept his prayer not to deal with you according to your folly. For you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has." Whew, strong words. Accusing our friends of wrongdoing or assuming that our loved ones are not loving God or their relationship with God is non-existent in the midst of these questions is probably not a wise way to build deeper relationships or to help someone find their way through an experience of doubt. Making judgment calls on a person's salvation, it's not our place to begin with. And if we are able to just listen, we will be able to actually engage in a dialogue with them. So getting back to those conversations we've had around Alpha tables, the mutual agreement at Alpha, if you've never been a part of it, is that it is a safe place. Going into each session, everyone is welcomed. We welcome all questions, concerns, points of view, and people for who they are, without looking to give quick answers or pat Sunday school responses to every query that comes up. I think this is something that we as a church are in desperate need of. So this place here, it's not just an organization. It's not just a religious outlet of worship and prayer. It's not just somewhere to come on Sunday morning for a little pick-me-up message and free coffee and some good music. We are a community here. We're family. And as many of you know, family relationships are not always the easiest ones to deal with. But that's because the people that we love, we're able to be ourselves with, if we're brave enough to be. And I think that as we look again to Scripture, there's a beautiful picture of what this community can look like. We needing to be involved in each other's lives, open and vulnerable to ourselves, to each other, and to God. So this is Romans 12. It's a beautiful passage. The words will be up on the screen. You can follow along. "Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection or sisterly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal, but fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints, those around you in the community, and seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be prideful, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all." Dear friends, when doubts arise, and they will arise if you haven't experienced them before, I don't want to scare you, but when you walk through those fears and uncertainties, do you want to walk them alone? What if one day you find yourself saying, "I don't even know if I believe"? What if it takes a community you've embedded yourself in to remind you that God has made you some truly wonderful promises? I think that we can take up the cry of the man who in Mark 9 comes to Jesus with his son who's been suffering for a long time, asking Jesus to heal him. And he says, if you can, please heal my son. And Jesus responds, "If I can, you just need to believe." And the man says, I think words that are so powerful, "I believe, but help my unbelief." It's so hard for us, I think, to hold these things in tension, but that should be our cry as we walk. Whether we are standing strong in belief or we are doubting and we are experiencing unbelief, Let's pray, I believe, help my unbelief. Today, whether you feel far away from God, like you haven't heard his voice in a long time, or whether he's close in your heart and you can stand firm in your belief, let's join together somewhere in that murky middle ground as a community. Lean on each other and know this: he, our God, will never leave us. He will never leave you or forsake you. That is something he has promised you. He loves you, and he's good.